Let's head out to the district, and Bill Flores joins us this morning. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
I know you've probably got a busy day, and you've got a big district, and this is the day when that does make it tough to get to all the places you want to go, but what are your plans today?
Well, I'm starting in Waco this morning with some veterans activities up here. And by the way, I'm going to jump off on a tangent here for a minute. There was a letter to the editor in the Waco paper a few weeks ago that was talking about the deplorable condition of the library at the Waco VA hospital, the Dory Miller Hospital. And so we participated in a program with the Library of Congress to take a bunch of surplus books. And then actually I cleaned out a bunch of my library, too. And we gave over 500 books yesterday to the VA Healthcare Center here in Waco.
Oh,
so that
great.
I was pretty pleased with that.
Sure.
But anyway, so I'll start up here in Waco, and we'll end up in Bryan College Station this evening.
That's it. And remember, it's rain or shine at Veterans Park tonight. Again, looks like we may have some shower activity, but we'll see how all that goes.
I got my camo raincoat.
All right, there you go. Well, let's talk first of all, I guess. Let's start with the Keystone Pipeline, because obviously they had asked for kind of a hold back on the approval process, and now where are we with the pipeline, in your view?
Well, the pipeline for now is dead. We're going to have to hope that we get a better president in 2017, and then Congress and the president can work together to get that approved. Look, Congress and the American people made it clear what their opinion is on this. Congress, on a bipartisan basis, multiple times has approved the pipeline, and the American people still support it by over a 70% margin. So, to me, we need to get after it and approve the thing. It's good for American jobs. It's good for the American energy security situation. And it's good to build a North American powerhouse with our friends in Canada and also in Mexico.
Well, now, part of this is already in place, though, and that can still be used and is usable?
It is, but it hasn't solved the problems that we have in terms of but taking heavier oil and getting it to the refineries that are the most efficient in processing it. And we still have a bottleneck up at Henry Hub. The current pipeline runs from Henry Hub up in Oklahoma down to the refineries in Texas. But we still have bottlenecks up in Oklahoma, and the Keystone would help us solve part of that.
Sure. Let's also now, I think also you took some action on DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, last week.
Well, I didn't, but the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals did, and I was very proud of them. They continue to assert that Congress has Article I responsibility, and we are the sole owners of legislative activity, not the president. And so I've been really pleased with the judge from South Texas and also the way the Fifth Circuit Court has upheld his opinions regarding stopping the president from his unlawful actions.
You know, and this has been a sense of frustration, and obviously this is not the first president that has used executive actions. There have been presidents who have used it even more times than the president, a current president, has. But where he is using it seems to be the thing that is really infuriating the legislative branch.
Well, that's correct. I mean, unfortunately, Congress for about six decades has ceded more and more of its responsibility to the executive branch. And starting 5 years ago, we began as the congressional branch, the Article I branch of our government, to reassert our authority and to take back the authority that should not reside with the president. Of course, he's resisted that. And you take that along with his feeling that the Constitution is irrelevant and that the Congress is inconvenient. And it makes for a bad combination. I'm hopeful that we have a president that respects the Constitution starting in January 17.
Bill Flores joining us in the district. I'd like to talk about a couple of things that happened over on the Senate side. First, the Senate, by a wide margin, passed the revised annual defense. This was a 91-3 vote, I think. This is the one that the president had vetoed, but it came back around. Tell me how this is different and how it was able to pass the Senate by such a strong number.
Well, there are really only a couple of minor changes, and I'm getting into the weeds here, but what it does, the overall top-line spending is $5 billion less than what the House and Senate passed the first time. And that's to comply with the budget deal that was passed a couple of weeks ago. The second thing is that it moves a lot of the plus up in defense spending that we have put into the Global War on Terror Fund and moves that back into base level spending. That's a good change. What was happening before was to try to comply with the budget caps. In terms of the original legislation that passed, this is really a better, smarter way to fund the military.
Bill Flores joining us. And from what I'm seeing, momentum seems to be building in the Senate to repeal the Cadillac tax on the high-end private health care plans of the Affordable Care Act. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it should be repealed. I think there's two things to think about, though. Number one is the unions wanted Obamacare. They supported the president, and they wanted Obamacare. The Cadillac tax hits them hardest. So I'm kind of curious as to why Republicans are jumping up and down to repeal the Cadillac tax to benefit the unions that weren't supportive of this, were supportive of this whole law and this president started with. The second thing we've got to deal with is what does it do to the deficit? If we repeal this tax, then Obamacare, which is a deficit generator on its own, will become an even higher deficit generator. That said, if there was a repeal vote in the House for the Cadillac to repeal that, I would vote to repeal the Cadillac tax.
Fox Business had a presidential debate on last night with the Republicans. I'd like for you to put your CPA hat on and give folks kind of a 101 when it comes to the idea of floating a $15 minimum wage, what that does to the economy.
Well, what that means is our teenage unemployment, which is already really high, particularly among our minority communities, would get a lot worse. And so a $15 minimum wage hurts the very people it's designed to help. The current minimum wage is an entry-level wage. It's not meant for people to be there very long, and that's candidly what happens. For instance, if you look at Walmart, Walmart has 1 billion employees in the United States, and less than 1% of them are on the minimum wage. And the reason for that is because they move up fairly quickly. If they're forced to go to a $15 minimum wage, or even where our local fast food restaurants are, then what they're going to do is they're going to start finding ways to reduce the number of people that they hire. And that typically hurts our lower income and lower middle income Americans the worst. It's a bad law. I mean, in my view, we ought to quit talking about minimum wage and start talking about what can we do to lift all wages through economic growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, why don't we come up with tax reform and fiscal reform and regulatory reform and a 21st century energy strategy and a healthcare reform plan that based on private sector principles. Once we do that, we don't have to worry about minimum wage because nobody's making it. Everybody's making higher than that.
Bill Floor is joining us. The House is not in session until next Monday, and they'll start up again. Though he's short on the job as a speaker, kind of compare and contrast, if you will, how it seems that this speaker is going to act as opposed to his predecessor.
Well, so far I've been really impressed with what Paul's done. He has been very participative and open in the process that we've been engaged with in his first few days on the job. For instance, if you look at the transportation bill, there were almost 300 amendments that were filed to be on an open process for that bill. We debated and voted on them, about 100 of them on the House floor. That's different than what we had before in terms of transportation bills. The other thing he's done is he's set up two special committees. One is an advisory board that I'm part of, and I represent the Republican Study Committee, and we also have the House Freedom Caucus and the Tuesday Group as part of it, and then three other at-large members. We are going to, hash out important legislation before it comes to the floor. And that way you don't have to have the food fight on the floor. So I can look across the table at Charlie Dent, who's the chair of the Tuesday group, and say, Charlie, you know, I know you've got some problems with this conservative piece of legislation that we support. What's the 80% we can agree on? Mm-hmm. And then get that behind us and then figure out how we deal with the 20% we don't agree on. So we'll meet once a week as a group. And I think that will allow us to have a more efficient process moving forward because all of the ideological groups, if you will be well represented in the discussion before things come to the floor. The other thing is he's set up a special committee to determine how we should change the rules on the population of the steering committee. The steering committee is the group that appoints all the chairs and the committee members. And so he put together a special committee so that we could come up with a new way to populate the steering committee before Thanksgiving. And I think that's important. Let me give you an example. My class and the two classes that came in after me represent almost 60% of the House representatives. We've only got 20% representation on the steering committee. So I think we, as the folks who came in and made the majority for House Republicans ought to have a big say in what happens in moving forward. And changing the steering committee process will help us do that.
Sure. New blood good. Finally today, we had talked last week about Kevin Brady was pending getting the chairmanship of the Ways and Means. He did get that. Speak to the influence that we now have in Texas with the chairman. Are we at a high water mark or the first as well as it's been going for a long time for Texas and leadership?
Well, Texas, you know, Texas has always been a strong state in terms of leadership in the House, and we are probably as strong now as we've ever been. For one thing, we've got more members than we've ever had at 25 Republicans. We also have 7 chairs, and we've got me chairing the Republican Study Committee. So Texas has a huge influence. Now, not all the other states like that necessarily, but we as Texans believe it gives the state a great seat at the table to determine policy moving forward.
Well, we absolutely need it. Congressman Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. We appreciate safe travels today, and we appreciate you being with us.
You bet. I'd ask all our listeners to be sure and reach out and thank a veteran for their service to our country today.
Should do it every day. Thank you, sir.